Hello and welcome to another edition of Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Letterkenny woman Sally Murphy, who is the new president of the Donegal Women in Business Network. But first, passenger numbers through City of Derry Airport are up. In fact, the latest figures for the first quarter of the year show that they were up by more than 10% on the pre-COVID figures. Well, it's been a challenging few years for the airport, and the curtailment of a number of Ryanair services impacted significantly on passenger throughput. But that trend has been reversed and the outlook is positive. EasyJet will soon become the biggest operator at the airport, and the North's Department of the Economy is underwriting the costs of running the airport up until 2029. On top of that, the state-subsidised PSO route to Heathrow is being funded for another 2 years, and another subsidised route linking City of Derry Airport with Dublin Airport is on the cards for the latter part of next year. Now, significantly, around 40% of all passengers using City of Derry Airport are going to or coming from Donegal. Well, this is a point that I discussed when I spoke with Steve Fraser, Managing Director of City of Derry Airport. But I began by putting it to him that the latest passenger figures show that things are very much on an upward trajectory.
Yeah, very much so, Chris. I think the figures show the growth trend, and particularly important for us, that finally that recovery since 2019, which is the baseline we would all use from COVID. And the figures in terms of passenger numbers looking good, but you know, as you probably heard, most importantly for us is a few very significant things have got over the line, like the funding for the airport now secured through the Northern Ireland Executive, through DfE, which has never happened before, which is great. That gives us at least another 4 years of security where we're not looking over our shoulder every year, which is really positive. And the UK government and Northern Ireland Executive also confirmed the London PSO for another 2 years. So lots of great things happening to those passenger numbers. We should expect to grow even further, possibly in the next year, another 30% on what you're seeing, which will be fantastic. And most importantly for us as well, another big target, the Dublin PSO, the Irish government's just been announced to happen in 2026. So, yeah, a lot of good things happening through City of Derry Airport.
And worth pointing out that the proportion of passengers either going to Donegal or coming from Donegal continues to be a significant part of your business.
Oh, very much so. We've always known that up to 40% of our passengers are from Donegal, across Donegal, but Letterkenny in particular. And with that Dublin route coming next year, that's only going to increase and the proportion get even larger, because tend to be about two-thirds of the people using that Dublin route will be from Donegal.
And just comparing with the pre-COVID levels, where are we now? Are we going to get back above them before the end of the year?
That's right, yeah. Before the end of the year, we're already well on track for that. We look like we're going to finish the year on around 260,000 passengers. Pre-COVID, we're around 200,000. So, yeah, we've really tipped that balance, and at last we'll be well past that baseline where we were pre-COVID.
Now, tell us a little bit about the different operators using City of Derry Airport. Ryanair had been, I suppose, the dominant airline. That has changed somewhat now. EasyJet have a number of new routes, and they will, am I right in saying, by the end of the year be the main airline using City of Derry Airport?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. We have Manchester still operated by Ryanair, although they've had their challenges with aircraft deliveries. We expect them to grow again at City of Derry, but due to aircraft deliveries and the new post-Brexit rules with UK versus Irish registered aircraft, they've had to restrict what they're doing to Manchester at the minute. Loganair operating the London Heathrow service 3 times daily now, which is fantastic given hub connectivity across the world. And as you said, EasyJet only just started there at City of Derry back in November last year. But come September, when they pick up the Birmingham route, that will make them the largest operator out of City of Derry, operating Birmingham, Edinburgh and Liverpool. Only started just over 6 months ago, and before the end of this year, they'll be the largest operator. So all good signs.
And when it comes to developing new routes, the lead-in period can be, I suppose, typically a couple of years or more. So going forward, you would be pretty confident that we are going to see a further expansion of the options from City of Derry.
Oh, very much so. And you're right on that lead-in time. The airlines can plan 18 months and more in advance. And a lot of that driven by aircraft deliveries as well and their available capacity. But needless to say, even smaller airports like yourself can be talking to them 2-3 years and convincing them on certain routes, particularly from an airport like City of Derry. But as you can see, recently we've been fairly successful and we're fairly sure we will be, and currently talking to them what it looks like in the next couple of years for European routes and holiday summer sun routes.
And what about the charter side, the business of the holiday routes, as some people might refer them to?
This current summer, we have a gap. That's literally because, the bigger airlines, they're struggling with their aircraft deliveries and available capacity. We did previously have a very good relationship with Travel Solutions, who are a local, if you like, but the largest Northern Ireland tour operator. Unfortunately, they were just unable to compete with the likes of Jet2 and TUI, particularly in that family market. So we have a gap this year, but looking forward to see what we can bringing it in the coming years, particularly to the very popular destinations like Faro, Alicante, Malaga, places like that.
Now, you've mentioned the PSO route to Heathrow, so just to explain for those people who maybe aren't familiar with the term, effectively this is a state subsidy, often for routes that go to more peripheral locations, but it's absolutely vital. We hear a lot about the need to have better access to the northwest. So Heathrow, that route is operating, and there are hopes that we may see the re-establishment with Irish government support for a route between Dublin and City of Derry once again.
That's right, yeah. There's what's called a PSO, or a public service obligation, is where the government recognised the benefits, particularly in a peripheral region like ours, where it'd be very difficult to persuade an airline to come in and do double daily frequencies or triple daily frequencies like we have on the London Heathrow. So they offered that support, put it out to public procurement, and the winning bidder gets to operate the route. And as you said, yeah, Dublin is coming on board now in 2026. We've recently met with the Irish government on that just last week in Leinster House, and I'm very encouraged by the work that they've already done and the good, clear understanding they've got of what it'll take to make that route work for the operator and the benefits it'll have for the Northwest. And I have to say that the meeting was very much in a partnership approach, where often we might be going to meetings trying to negotiate and ask. It was very much like, we all want this to happen. We can see the benefits for the Northwest. Very encouraged by that.
There's been reports that we could see a Dublin-Derry route possibly by the second half of 2026. Would you be going along with that sort of prediction?
Yeah, very much so. I think the government's target is no later than October 26. Of course, from an airport point of view, we'd like to accelerate as best we can. I think we have to respect the different hoops that they may have to jump through, and the regulations they'll have to make sure they comply with EU regulations on things like state aid. It's an odd PSO, because technically City of Derry sits outside the EU, so they just need to get those permissions. They'll need to write a procurement process. They'll have to give the winning bidder time to be able to get aircraft and resources and people into position. But yeah, very confident, as you say, the second half of 26 will definitely be delivering a Derry to Dublin route.
Now, a link with Dublin obviously will be welcomed by business and leisure travellers, people going up and down to Dublin, but significantly it also means that you're linking into Dublin, which is a hub, and it means you've got the onward possibilities going west to the United States and going east to numerous parts of Europe and then linking into other hubs. So it'll open up an awful lot of doors and bring traffic both ways.
Yeah, oh, very much so, yeah. I mean, the US is a huge part for the whole Irish market, with 80% nearly of people entering through Dublin. So we don't underestimate the size of that US market, and being able to provide such quick and easy access up to the Northwest is something we haven't had before. And whether that you're a leisure traveller or whether you're a business person or an investor, it'll encourage both, because people are getting into the Dublin and maybe looking at the itinerary, what they wanted to do around Ireland. And it's quite a turnoff to get a four-hour coach journey in either direction. So this will really benefit the Northwest for tourism. And, of course, for that FDI or investor piece, when you're looking for these large companies to come into your part of the world, then they really place a heavy emphasis on connectivity and how they can get the people there. So now we're able to deliver that to IDEA, and Investor and I are very interested in being able to sell the City of Derry Airport as an asset when they're looking for clients.
In terms of the airport running costs, many airports need some sort of subsidy, and in the case of City of Derry Airport, you've had local council support, which has been invaluable. You touched on earlier there the fact that the Northern Ireland Department of the Economy has announced that it's going to underwrite the costs of running the airport up until 2029. You know, that is hugely significant, and I suppose in many respects it's a real vote of confidence in the future of the airport.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I think, you know, it's worth going back to your original point there about airports needing subsidy. The majority of people may not know that nearly all airports in the world under 1 million passengers need some form of subsidy, subvention or support. 1 million tends to be the sort of magic number. There's a few just over 700,000, but we're still quite some way away from that. So most governments are very good at being able to look and see the economic benefits, those wider economic benefits that airport and connectivity brings. And I'm pleased to say, you know, all these years, Derry City and Strabane District Council have seen that, realised that, and subsidised the airport. And of course, it was inherently unfair with one set of ratepayers from one council when, as we said, you know, 40% of the passengers from Donegal, and then stretched across to the Causeway Coast and Glens airports here for that whole northwest of Ireland. So I think it's much more fair that NIE have been able to pick that up through the Department for Economy. We're very grateful for it, and I think it secures our future now for quite some time.
And I suppose it's fair to say that the outlook for most regional airports is pretty positive, in that with the increase in air traffic, and a lot of people probably prefer to fly through a smaller airport, a less congested airport. There can be great advantages, from car parking to less delays, less queues, getting through the gates quicker. And I was actually listening today about the fact that Cork Airport has just won a major European award, and they've invested a lot of money. I think they're up looking at 3 million passengers. You know, the continued growth. So again, from a City of Derry perspective, you've got still room for further growth, and getting in and out of the airport, huge advantages compared to the bigger ones.
Yeah, oh, very much so. I think, you know, we're cursed sometimes with our size, and we have to look for that subvention. Now that's secured, we're able to go out there with a quite unique product. We're able to take the anxiety and stress out of the journey, whereas, you know, a lot of people are always worried about getting to the airport. How many hours do I have to get there early? You know, what's the journey through the airport going to be like? And City of Derry, we're very proud to mention to people, you know, in most cases, car to bar in 10 minutes. And it's a very nice thing to be able to say and take the stress out of the journey. I'm really pleased that you mentioned Cork. They're a fantastic team. We work with them a lot. We attend some similar events, and they really deserve that award. I'm very deserving of it. Fantastic team. And then back to your earlier point about that, the regional airports and starting to be appreciated. I think we see that with the whole regional balance agenda, whether that's within Northern Ireland or with that sort of shared island and appreciating the border region. So I think we're in a good space for people appreciating what the regional connectivity brings to both tourism and business.
And just rounding things off, as we look forward to the years ahead, what's the actual capacity at City of Derry, and what are there any capital expenditure plans in the pipeline?
Well, yeah, yes. The capacity for us at the minute is with the current buildings is around 650,000 passengers. That's just the sort of legal capacity of what we could cope with, but it spreads some of the busier points throughout the week. Like, we have very busy points on Mondays and Fridays at the minute, where we're close to capacity on some hours of the day. If we can spread that out throughout the week and increase the frequencies, we're looking at around 650,000. Of course, we're not going to wait till we get there and decide what we do. We have plans in the next 3-4 years what we need to do with the building and the infrastructure to see growth well beyond that. And the Dublin flight that we talked about earlier has the potential to be 80,000 plus additional passengers a year to what we currently see. And with the sort of the growth that we're seeing and the direction from EasyJet and hopefully Ryanair coming back online after they have more aircraft deliveries, I think it gives us a very nice headache to have. We do have some significant CapEx challenges and opportunities to be able to face up to how we grow the airport. And, and from my perspective, try and keep some of that uniqueness we talked about with that fantastic passenger experience that we have, as well as growing it into a fit modern airport for the future.
And just in terms of employment numbers, what are we talking about currently?
We're talking 138 people at the minute. That's only going to go in one direction as we grow.
And just one other question that, as it springs to mind, with the growth of the airport in the future, planes are becoming more efficient, we're seeing less emissions. What about the airport runway? Can you take much bigger aircraft, or is it sufficient as it is to take the new versions of the 737s, etc.?
Oh, yes, very much. So the runway is 1,996 metres long, so effectively 2 kilometres long, and that's more than able to cope with the new modern 737-type aircraft. We are realistic that our operations will be within sort of 4.5 hours. So that whole European market is fully feasible from City of Derry Airport. Anything when we'd all call long haul, then that isn't feasible, and it'll be the bigger boys at both Dublin and Belfast and the larger Irish airports to be able to cope with that. But I think we've more than enough on our plate and plenty of growth available within that European, UK and Irish market.
So in conclusion, the future looking pretty positive.
The future's bright, and it's heading in very much in the right direction with a lot of support and appreciation for what we do.
And that was Steve Fraser, Managing Director of City of Derry Airport. Letterkenny woman Sally Murphy is the new president of the Donegal Women in Business Network. A business communications consultant, coach and trainer, TEDx woman speaker and author, she set up her own business, Murphy Communications, back in 2016. With the business evolving and the emphasis very much on, as she puts it, helping good people and projects shine, it was a case of igniting organizations, people and culture through powerful stories well told. And hence her business became Well Told. Earlier this week, I spoke to her about becoming the new president of the Donegal Women in Business Network, but I began by asking her to outline her business journey to date.
Thanks, Chris. It's lovely to be here. So actually, I was just thinking about it, getting ready for this interview. Next year, it'll be 10 years since I set up my business. So that would have been around September of 2016. And initially I was called Murphy Communications, and then in 2018 I rebranded to Well Told, and my strapline is let's tell better stories. And so I say that I'm on a mission to help people ignite their organisation, their culture, with powerful stories well told. So it's communications, it's storytelling, it's narrative, it's culture, it's executive presence, it's team training, it's one-to-one, all in the realm of communications, but with a specific focus on narrative and storytelling.
Because people can have a great business, they can have a great story, but if you can't tell it, you're not going to be able to spread the word and get that message out.
That's it, yeah. And also it's about trust. Stories are a pull factor rather than a push factor. So rather than you trying to push your message and your meaning onto people, if you can figure out how to tell the right stories to the right audience at the right time, you will inevitably pull people towards you and your mission and your message, whether that's as a leader working with teams of people or whether that's as a small business trying to encourage people to come and pay attention to you and your product. It works across the board.
Now, something may be interesting to one person, it may not be interesting to another person, but often it's how you tell the story that makes it interesting, and maybe somebody has a great story to tell, but they don't even realise it.
It happens all the time. One of the things that I hear many of the people that I work with, and I've worked with people all over the world in all sorts of organisations, and I hear the same thing over and over again, and they say, I don't know if I have any stories. I don't know if anybody would be interested in my story. I don't want to bore people. And all these kinds of limiting beliefs are really universal, no matter who the person is or how much experience they have. People are afraid of being able to communicate in a storied way because they don't want to waste people's time. They don't want to look unprofessional, and they're not quite sure how to do it, actually. Even though we all tell stories naturally, being able to use it in a very strategic and intentional and deliberate way for business is a whole other skill, you know?
Absolutely. Now, before you founded Murphy Communications, you did have a number of other posts. So fill in the gaps for us from leaving university. What happened next?
Well, I think I had a portfolio career before it was cool to have one. So I always worked in culture and the arts, Chris. So I from Donegal, I went to university in Queens, and then I spent some time in Galway working for the Galway Film Fla. And then I came back up to Donegal and started to work for Donegal County Council in the old Letterkenny Arts Centre and then the Regional Cultural Centre when it was opened. I was there at the beginning of that. And along the way, I was involved in projects like the Flight of the Earls and the Donegal Diaspora Project, and really interesting, exciting things, projects that shaped Donegal in many ways, and the Donegal that we see today and the networks that we see today. So really fundamental for me in terms of cutting my teeth around networking and what happens when collaboration happens. And then I went into Derry, and I worked in Void Art Gallery in Derry for about 5 years, and we brought the Turner Prize to Derry and did loads of good work there. And yeah, 2016, I started to listen to the whispers that were following me around, and I just took a leap and I followed my heart. I had no business plan. I had no savings. I had no idea what I was doing, but I took the leap and set up my business, and I haven't looked back since.
So tell me, in the early days, how did you actually attract customers, so to speak? How did you actually generate the business, starting pretty much from scratch? Obviously, some people would have known your name, but you were reaching out to people who maybe you would have never had previous communication with.
Yeah, initially it was word of mouth, and it, to be honest with you, it has continued to be word of mouth for my business. Predominantly, that's how I work with clients. I had a really lucky break in, I think, around, must have been 2018. It was around the same time as I moved from Murphy Communications to Well Told. And there's a great story. I was at a wedding in the Shandon Hotel, and the bride asked me at the last minute to make a speech on her behalf. And I did, and I stood up and I made a speech. I wasn't a bridesmaid, but I was an old friend, and I made a speech and celebrated her. And when I sat back down at the table, a woman who was sitting beside me leaned across and she said, "Did you really not have time to prepare that speech?" And I said, "No, I didn't." And she said, "God, I could really do with someone with your communication skills on my team." But it turned out she was the head of customer experience for Google, EMEA. So 2 weeks later, I found myself in London working with her team. And that opened doors for me in a way that nothing else could have. So that was a sliding doors moment in my career. And from there, it gave me a level of, I suppose, credibility and connection. And I've worked with the United Nations, Johnson & Johnson, Thermo Fisher Scientific, the National Museum of Ireland, like really, really impressive organisations, and I really credit it to that moment in the Shandon Hotel in Donegal.
And is it a case sometimes that you are out, you're given a brief by a company, and there could be a conference on? Are you the person that they're selecting to present their story?
Yeah, and I suppose, to be honest, Chris, like a lot of the time, and this is the this is the truth. Like, a lot of the time, as I've been in business, I've been figuring it out. You know, I didn't study business in school. I didn't study it in university. I came from an arts and culture background. So I am 100% self-taught and have relied very heavily on mentors and networks and community and people who've gone ahead before me to help me understand what I need to do, as well as learning and books and podcasts and courses. So what that means is oftentimes when an organization comes to me, you know, now I have developed a suite of products and I can point to them. But right up until a couple of years ago, an organization would come to me and they'd say, can you help us train our senior leadership team because the big boss is flying in from America? I'd be like, yep, no problem. I can do that. Like, no matter what people asked me to do in the realm of communications, I said, yep, I can do that. Yep, I can do that. And then I went off and I figured out how to do it. And then I delivered it. And then it was another thing I could do. Do you know what I mean?
So give us an idea of, you mentioned there a suite of products. Give us an idea of some examples.
So a couple of years ago, I kind of distilled it down into three key products. So North Star Story is a brand consultancy package where a business will come to me and I'll help them develop the story of their business and all of the assets that might come with that. But it's about developing their core narrative. And that might be a B2C business, but a lot of the time I've done that work internally for organizations, crafting their story, the North Star that helps them navigate. So that's North Star Story. The second product of three is called Stellar. And Stellar is my one-to-one program. And that's where I work with leaders and help them with their story or their storytelling. So it could be executive presence. It could be crafting their signature talk. It could be helping them build their story bank. It could be helping them come up with what they're going to say at their town halls or their meetings for the first quarter. It's one-to-one. So that's Stellar. And then the third package is called Scale Up. And Scale Up is a play on the Irish word for story and the English word to scale. So that's my team training program. And that's the trainings that I offer to one to many. And that again looks like narrative as a tool. It could be conflict and resolution skills. It could be executive presence for teams. It could be, how to present your brand as a team more effectively on LinkedIn. There's lots of different team trainings I do there. So I've whittled it down to those three main products now. I tend to end up working a lot in one for a while. So it's just the way the market seems to go. So at the minute, I'm doing a lot of work inside Stellar. I consult into Johnson & Johnson part-time every week. So that's quite a new piece to my business, but I'm contracted into J&J as a creative lead for one of their global teams. So that's taken up a lot of my time now as well.
And does it mean you've a lot of travel, or are you availing of Zoom and Team and various platforms like them?
I'm mainly online. I mainly work from my home office here in Letterkenny. I will travel and last November I flew from America. I was doing work in Chicago and I got off the plane in Dublin from Chicago and got straight on another plane to go to Switzerland to do a 4-day offsite in narrative skills for the International Office of Migration at the United Nations. That's a rarity, though. Most of the time I'm here in Letterkenny looking out at the cathedral from my office window and tapping into people all over the place. I travel to Dublin and Cork a lot as well, but that feels like ordinary. I just wish there was a train, but sure, don't we all?
Now, I see you are a certified public narrative coach. So Just explain that term, public narrative coach. What exactly does that mean?
So public narrative is a leadership storytelling framework that was created by a man called Marshall Ganz, and he teaches it out of Harvard University. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to study with Marshall Ganz back in, 2023 it began. And I then went on and did additional training to be a public narrative coach. And so it's a framework, it's a methodology, it's a way of helping people craft a story that has three parts. And anybody can use this story, but particularly leaders who need to compel their people to move, to make change, to take action. And in public narrative, you learn about these three specific types of story. It's the story of self, the story of us, and the story of now. And you learn how to help a leader craft this message in a way that will compel people to pay attention and to feel motivated to take action.
And I see, you know, when you're talking about your business and how it's evolved, you say that you get to do what I love, helping good people and projects shine. And that really sums it up.
Yeah, it does for me. It does. That's what it's all about. And my favorite pieces, like, don't get me wrong, I'm really proud of the work I've done with organizations that are impressive. But what I care about the most is individuals. And that doesn't, I will be as excited about working with someone who's a solo business owner on the Wild Atlantic Way to someone who's in charge of a large organization. But when I see the penny drop for people, and when I see their eyes light up, and when I see that they understand, not only do they have an incredible story, but they have all the skills to tell that story in a way that will pull people towards them, that's what makes it all worthwhile for me.
Now, I see also that you are a TEDx speaker. How does that come about? How do you become a TEDx speaker?
I applied for it. I saw the organisers send that out, and it was for Nollaig na Mann. And I knew I wanted to tell the story of my grandmother, who had a really interesting story. And that's the thing about stories, you know, if we slow down enough to pay attention to them, there are stories within us that are begging to be told. And that was one such story. I knew I wanted to find a way to tell the story of my grandmother, because she wasn't able to tell her story when she was alive. And I had the great privilege of being able to tell her story as a TEDx speaker. And it has been picked up since then and told on different platforms. But I applied, Chris, and they said yes.
Now, for people listening in, just to point out, you've some big clients there that you've mentioned, but that's not to say that you also will deal with small people who are self-employed or small businesses, and no doubt you can tailor a package.
Sure can. Yeah, sure can. And the thing is, and I work with people here in Donegal, of course, I if I'm not the right fit for someone, though, I will probably know somebody else who is. So if I can't do the work that somebody's looking for, I should be able to signpost them. And that's what I try and do. Or maybe I think somebody will be better than me. And I'll signpost them, because I think that's why referral happens, because, you know, trust is really important. And if I can work with somebody, I will. And if I can't, I'll be straightforward about that and signpost them on.
And looking at the immediate future, pretty upbeat about what's in store?
Yeah, I am. I mean, look, you know, being in business isn't easy. It's really hard at times. And I'm coming up to this 10-year anniversary next year, and I suppose I'm thinking an awful lot about that. And I suppose I need to take time to slow down and kind of appreciate what I've achieved and how far I've come, you know. And I definitely feel more confident in my capacity to deliver. And I feel more sure about what I do and the value of it. Like last year was a tough year in business. It was a tough year for a lot of people who do what I do. This year seems to be different, but I don't know what the future holds. And so I just keep on trying to do a good job and do the very best I can. And you just keep turning up for me and for the business. My business has been very good to me as well, and I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful to her for that.
And if people want to find out more, tell us the details about your website.
Yeah, so the website is welltold.ie, like a well-told story. So welltold.ie, and all my social media is the same. It's Well Told Sally.
We then spoke about her role as president of the Donegal Women in Business Network, how she got involved, how she was inspired by the likes of Evelyn McGlynn and Trish McGinley, and the energy and enthusiasm within the network.
Yeah, I am so proud of us. I'm so proud of the Donegal Women in Business Network, our committee, past and present. And I take the responsibility of it so seriously. You know, I am standing on the shoulders of giants. When I joined the Donegal Women in Business Committee, it was in 2020. They had had me as a speaker at their event, their 20th anniversary event, and that was Evelyn and Trish who had brought me on to that. And I was blown away by their energy and the enthusiasm and the appetite in the room I saw that day for women to be connected and to learn and grow and network and be in community with one another. And so when they invited me to join the committee, it was an immediate yes. Of course, COVID happened then and things changed and in terms of how we network. But, I mean, people like Evelyn held her coffee mornings and knitted the whole thing together and built community virtually and digitally. And now we've had several presidents. We've had Joe Daly and Larissa Feeney as the most recent president. So I've been able to shadow them and watch them and learn from them. And yeah, they've now voted me in as the president with two vice presidents, Lindsay Reynolds and Mary from the Right Angle PR, Mary Crawford, and then a new committee. Like, there's some people on the committee who've been on it for a while, but we have a whole load of new members on the committee, a new facilitator, and yeah, we are growing from strength to strength. We've over 300 members now,
which is pretty considerable. So I suppose in a nutshell, it's all about bringing people together, exchanging ideas, and you never know what avenues it can open up.
Well, if you think about that from my perspective, I mean, you know, when I joined the committee, even because of being a part of the network, then I was invited onto the stage at the 20th birthday and I did a talk there. From there, someone in the audience invited me to do a keynote speech at Microsoft just before the lockdown. And in Microsoft, I met Marie Gleason. So that was X amount of years ago, nearly 5 years ago. Marie and I stayed in touch. And Marie's now coming up to visit us in Donegal this week as the keynote speaker for our Solstice event. So the power of networking is immense. And to be able to have people in your virtual space, your physical space, people in your chat groups, a place to go to ask questions, to learn from, to connect, to collaborate, it is invaluable. And particularly in a place like Donegal, where our infrastructure is challenging, we're hugely rural, and yet all across this county, there are incredible women who are maybe at a dreaming stage, who are maybe fully fledged in business. They may be working for someone and interested in business. There's a whole rainbow of aptitude and interest when it comes to women in business. And no matter where you're at, we're a network who are inviting you to come in and say hello, to stay connected and to see what we're about. We have events that happen online and in person. We have our program set out for the first, the latter half of 2025 into the beginning of 2026. And we are here to support women, and we're as good as the women who surround us. So that's why I say, like, a rising tide lifts all boats. The more women that join the Donegal Women in Business Network, the stronger we'll become. And the ripple effect of that right across the county is enormous.
And again, if somebody wants to find out more, just go online, look up Donegal Women in Business Network, and you'll get a flavour of what's on offer.
Yeah, we're DonegalWomenInBusiness.com. And so you can find us there. And of course, we're on all the socials. And Donegal Women in Biz, I think, is a lot of our social handles. And you know, we've a big team out there. So I'm sure people who are listening, it won't be hard to find us in some way. And yeah, drop us a
drop us an email. You can email hello@donegalwomeninbusiness.com and Alana, our lovely facilitator, will pick it up and answer any questions you have.
And finally, Sally, away from your busy work life, if you're unwinding, what are your particular passions for taking it easy?
Well, I wish it was running, but it's not. It is swimming, walking the beach, and I guess doing some gardening, trying to keep my plants in order.
Yeah, and it is important to have that switch off time, isn't it? And getting that little balance right.
Yeah, I don't know about balance. I don't know if it's possible, but I do my best. You know, I think that's one of the things about being a woman in business. You know, very often women in business, they have a huge amount of the domestic load, or they're caretaking, or they're we wear many, many hats. And whether it's doing something individually, like going for a walk on the beach, or linking back in with your network, we have to find ways to restore and to nourish ourselves, you know. And the other thing I suppose that's really important to just say about the Donegal Women in Business Network is that we wouldn't be where we are today without, of course, all the people who've come before us in the form of the committee and the presidents, but also the Donegal Local Enterprise Office who fund us. So we're really pleased to have their support and the support of our sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely. When it, you know, started from small beginnings and look where it is now, as you say, over 300 members, and no doubt will continue to grow.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Like I say, I'm so proud of everything that we've achieved in the Donegal Women in Business Network. My job is to nurture it and nourish it until the next chapter. And to kind of keep this committee, you know, allow this committee to run it and to help hopefully steer the ship so that we can pass it on to the next generation of committee even stronger than it is now. That's what you're doing. We're just simply safeguarding it until the next people come along and grow it and shape it. And that's a great privilege.
And that was Sally Murphy, the new president of the Donegal Women in Business Network. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Until the next time, I'll conclude by wishing you a healthy, happy, and profitable week ahead. Goodbye.